Whoa, yeah. Thank you for that. I was going to ask how you're doing, but obviously you're alive and well. So, hey, turn to your neighbor and just tell them how glad you are that they are here. Just give them a good word of encouragement. Hopefully you are actually glad they were here, because otherwise you just lied. And I'm pretty sure that's a sin. So I'm just kidding. I love you guys. Hey, we're in the story. We're in week 5 of the story, and we're going to have a ton of fun today doing that. But let me just say this. As we were singing that last song, Jessica, thank you for sharing what you shared. I appreciate that. And I thought to myself, how amazing it is to live a life in the freedom, with freedom, that comes in the grace of Jesus. I mean, I was reminded of that during that song. I mean, it's a good thing because I need to be reminded of it often. I'm sure you are the same. But wow, what an amazing freedom we have in the grace of Jesus. And so I'm already encouraged. I could go home right now. Who's with me? Oh, come on now. That was a setup. You're not supposed to do that, especially all of our leaders. My wife and our kids' leader, both, right here. Just, yep, I'm ready. Get me out of here. Yikes. Oh, man, we got work to do, bro. We got work to do. Okay, so quick recap. Week 1, we talked about creation. We looked at God's design and his authority and how that played out in creation. Week 2, we talked about Noah and how the world had become so evil that every thought was always evil by man, and how crazy that must be, because even though we see evil today, it certainly does not feel like that. And so we saw God's power exerted and how he restarted with Noah and his family. And then we saw Joseph, and we read and we learned about his story and God's provision, and how that was like an incredible story of how someone could have no reason at all, have the most worst circumstance put on their life, and yet to be faithful to God and have him bring someone like Joseph out of a terrible situation to an incredible situation, and back and forth. It just seemed crazy. But God's provision was definitely alive and well in that story. And then we have week 4, which was last week. We talked about deliverance and the incredible story of God delivering the Israelites from slavery in Egypt and the oppression in Egypt, and how that played an incredible role in what we're going to learn about today, which is their journey after the Exodus, their journey after they were set free from the oppression that they had in Egypt. And so today is going to talk about God's new commands and a new covenant. Now, quickly, let me explain what covenant means. I'm pretty sure you all understand what a command is, but a covenant is definitely a little bit more of a churchy term. Even though it's not, you just don't hear it a lot in modern language. And so a covenant is this. It's an agreement. It's an agreement between two parties. Now, the difference between a covenant and a contract is that the contract is contingent upon both parties fulfilling their agreement. A covenant is more of like a marriage where, regardless of how poor your husband or wife does at their job from time to time, that you still would remain. You would remain in that covenant with them, that you would remain in that agreement regardless of their shortcomings. Whereas, like, let's say your TV provider, if they just stopped giving you TV and your contract said that they needed to give you 789,000 channels like they do, and you only had 700,000, you could say, that's it. You have broken the contract. I am no longer participating in this. Cancel it. But a covenant is different. And that's why God creates a covenant with his people, because it's not contingent upon the daily goodness of people. It's contingent upon people sticking with it regardless of their abilities. And so we're gonna see how that plays out today. There's two major themes in today's story. God's going to take and establish structure for the Israelites. That's going to be the first major theme, and we're going to talk about that in a minute. And then God also, in the bigger picture story, is going to be giving us clues, which we, of course, will recognize now as we are thousands of years later. But at that time, giving clues to his plan for reconciliation, his plan to reconcile people to himself. And so today you're going to see those two major themes play out. Now, before we get to our first section of scripture, I actually have a fun illustration. It's actually an experiment that I'm going to conduct. So I'm going to invite my two friends, Micah and Riley, to come on up. Welcome Micah and Riley, if you could, with me. Yep, come on. Now, what they're going to do is they're going to help me with it, establish the value of structure. And I'm not going to tell you much more than that because we'll evaluate later as we get to it. But I have to establish some controls for this experiment. So I have to ask you guys two questions I'm going to need you to answer into the microphone so they can hear. Okay? Are you a professional artist?
No.
Riley, are you a professional artist?
No.
Okay, Micah, can you read my mind? Riley, can you read my mind?
No.
No. Okay, so you guys heard it. They are not professional artists, and they cannot read my mind. That's all you need to know for right now. So, Riley, can you go sit at that table right there? Micah, can you go sit at that table right there? There's a piece of paper in front of you, and the piece of paper at the bottom, or the one that's nearest to you, will have instructions on what you're supposed to do. So turn that over, read them, follow the instructions, and we're going to check back in with you in about 15, 20 minutes. Okay? You got it? Good. Okay. Let's get to it. So, telling the story. Where we pick up the story is, of course, that the Israelites have been delivered from oppression in Egypt, and now they are on their own. They're in the desert of Sinai at the foot of Mount Sinai. Sound familiar? Probably, if you've ever seen the Ten Commandments. And they are finally, after generations of being underneath the thumb of another race, they are finally free. And as you can imagine, much like an 18-year-old moving out of the house for the first time, that freedom could lead to destruction really quick. Could it not? Right? Like, if it was up to me when I was 18, I probably would have eaten macaroni and cheese for every meal. Now, I still like to have it occasionally, as you can probably tell. But the fact of the matter is they are very much in a position where they have no idea what they actually need to do to take care of themselves. This newfound freedom can actually lead them to destruction. And so what we're going to see is that God, in his grace, is going to start to establish some parameters. He's going to establish some commandments that will help them fulfill this covenant that they are part of, or that they agree to. And so we're going to be in chapter 5 of the story. Now, of course, if you don't have the story with you, that's fine. That's what I'm going to be reading out of. It's sections from the NIV. So if you want to read from your NIV Bible or on your digital copy of the NIV, we're going to be in Exodus 19 and 20 for most of it. But what we're going to cover today is all the way through Exodus 40. So it's going to be a big chunk. You can go back and read it later. Try to follow along to the best of your ability. But mostly, just listen to what's being said. On the first day of the third month, after the Israelites left Egypt, on that very day they came to the desert of Sinai. After they set out from Rephidim, they entered the desert of Sinai, and Israel camped there in the desert in front of the mountain. Desert was in that a lot, just so you're clear. They're in the desert. Then Moses went up to God, and the Lord called to him from the mountain and said, "This is what you are to say to the descendants of Jacob and what you are to tell the people of Israel. You yourselves have seen what I did to Egypt and how I carried you on eagle's wings and brought you to myself. Now, if you obey me fully and keep my covenant, then out of all nations you will be my treasured possession. Although the whole earth is mine, you will be for me a kingdom of priests and a holy nation. These are the words you are to speak to the Israelites." So you have two things there. You have the idea that if you keep my covenant, you will be my treasured possession. Now that's the cause and effect of this situation. And now, of course, that seems like it might be something easy to do, right? Like, I was just like, hey, all you got to do is keep my covenant. Well, of course, as we're going to learn, that's not as easy as it sounds. But it shows us two things. God desires relationship with this people. He says, listen, all of the earth is mine. I created it. But out of the whole earth, if you can do this, you are going to be my treasured possession. Now that's quite a tall task, right? That's kind of a pressure-filled task if you really think about it. Because the standard of God, and they are very familiar with this. This is not new to the Israelites. The standard of God is perfection. It always has been, and it always will be. And so they kind of understand this, and they're going, okay. So Moses is supposed to tell this to the people, but I imagine that he was probably somewhat hesitant at first because of the amount of pressure. But that's okay. That's okay, because what's happening is God saying, if you do so, you are going to be my treasured possession. Now, this is like a spiritual trust fund that is wealthier than any amount of money or possession that you could imagine, right? If God is saying that you will be my treasured possession, you can imagine God, the creator of the universe, all things, saying that you are the most valuable, you are the treasured possession to me, you're probably going to feel set, right? It's going to make the Powerball seem like a piggy bank, right? I mean, that's essentially what's happening now. Of course, currency in their day was far less important than it is to us. But of all things, they still needed to live, right? And the struggle to live was very much real. And they're going, okay, God's going to be taking care of us. We're going to be awesome. All we got to do is listen and follow his covenant. Now, I think I would be able to handle that. Like, I would like to think, yeah, if God says, okay, all you got to do is this, I'm going to try to nail it, right? Like, that's what I think. And of course, we think that even today. Like, okay, God is asking me to do this thing. I'm going to nail it. Well, how often does that work out well for us, right? Like we can look back and go, ah, yeah, silly people. But they didn't know that at the time. They just know we're free now. God's delivered us from this oppression, and we need to do something in response. We are excited about the idea of them being free. Like, they are excited about the idea of being God's treasured possession. And so the covenant sounds awesome. And so we see that God actually begins to establish these structures. And today we're going to talk about the three structures that God really gives to the Israelites to help them to the best of their ability remain in that covenant, to help them remain connected to God's promise and commands. And so the first one is this. He gives the Ten Commandments, which you guys are all familiar with, right? And we're going to read those in just a second. But he does so because, A, he's not a God that desires to set his people up for failure. Right? Like, he does not desire, did not then and does not now, to set up people for failure. Even though sometimes it's like, man, I feel like I'm just getting it wrong. Well, we probably are, but that's okay. And we're going to find out why in a minute. But he gives his people these structures designed to help them keep the covenant. And so we pick that up. And I decided, you know, I was like, people probably have heard over and over and over the Ten Commandments. But the language of the Ten Commandments is actually very interesting to me, and it's actually very important. And so I wanted to read it. And so we're going to be on page 61 if you're following along. It's also in Exodus 21 through 21 if you're following along in your Bible. And it says this, so just listen carefully. I am the Lord your God, who brought you out of Egypt, out of the land of slavery. You shall have no other gods before me. You shall not make for yourself an image in the form of anything in heaven above or on the earth beneath or in the waters below. You shall not bow down to them or worship them. For I, the Lord your God, am a jealous God, punishing the children for the sin of their parents to the third and fourth generation of those who hate me, but showing love to 1,000 generations for those who love me and keep my commandments. You shall not misuse the name of the Lord your God, for the Lord will not hold anyone guiltless who misuses his name. Remember the Sabbath day by keeping it holy. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but on the seventh day is a Sabbath to the Lord your God. On it you shall not do any work, neither you nor your son or daughter, nor your male or female servant, nor your animals, nor your foreigner residing in your towns. For in 6 days the Lord made the heavens and the earth and the sea and all of that is in them. But he rested on the seventh day. Therefore, the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and made it holy. Honor your father and mother, so that you may live long in the land of the Lord your God is giving you. You shall not murder. You shall not commit adultery. You shall not give false testimony against your neighbor. You shall not covet your neighbor's house. You shall not covet your neighbor's wife, or his male or female servant, his ox or donkey, or anything that belongs to your neighbor. So God says, okay, listen, I'm going to give you 10 things. I'm going to give you 10 things that are going to encapsulate what I want you to do. Now, that actually grows. Like, if you read in Leviticus, like, there's tons of laws and procedures and things that they have to do so that they can remain in this covenant. But he says, these are the 10 that you should really focus on. And what's interesting about these 10, if you've never thought about this before, the first 4 are really commandments on how you would love God, right? He talks about the idea of, this is how you will love me. And then the remaining 6 are how you would love other people. Sound familiar? Love God, love people. If it doesn't, let me read this to you. Jesus says this in Matthew. Jesus replied, love the Lord your God with all your heart, all your soul, and all your mind. This is the first and greatest commandment, and the second is like it. Love your neighbor as yourself. All of the law and the prophets hang on these 2 commandments. So the commandments that God gives to the Israelites, some 1,400 plus years before that, and then Jesus says, 1,400 years later, I'm going to give you a new commandment. Well, is he really giving a new commandment? He's not. He's saying the whole time the plan has been to love God and love people. And Jesus takes it from being a commandment, a list, to a more simplified teacher version, right? Like, he's condensing everything into what they already were, which are commandments to love God and love people. Well, Israel's response to that, of course, is one of, like, great excitement. They're like, oh, these 10 things? We can nail this, right? We got this. They actually answer, and it's on page 62 in the story. It says, we will do everything the Lord has said. We will obey. We'll do everything the Lord has said. We will obey. Now, what an amazing response, right? Like, Lord, send me. Yes, I will do all of it. Well, it doesn't take long for them to mess that up. And that's actually encouraging to me, because when I think about these 10 commandments, this structure that God is laying down, this building block on how we might remain in a covenant, that when I fail at those things, much like the Israelites are about to do miserably, that it's going to be okay. So the story continues, and God desires to be near his people. He decided that, yes, I want to be near my people, I want to be with them, so I've got to have them in this covenant. The standard of perfection that I desire means that I have to give them this structure. And so he gives them the second structure called the tabernacle. So the first structure was the 10 commandments, the way that they might live their daily life. The second is the tabernacle. Now, tabernacle, another word, of course, that is probably not used in everyday language unless you have the Brooklyn Tabernacle Choir CDs like my mom did growing up. Anybody else jam out to those, right? No? Okay, just me. Sweet. So anyway, they have the tabernacle, and this is basically church 1.0, right? It's the alpha version of church. If you're into things like gaming and stuff like that, you know, they send out these versions early to test them. I mean, essentially, God doesn't need to test them, but he's saying this is the early version of the church. And so you can actually read, it's very specific how God has it set up. It's very specific. But in the story, they kind of gloss over that because it's not part of the narrative that's happening, but you should read it. It's amazing what happens and who can go where, and the most holy place where God dwells. Talks about if the clouds over it, that they can go in. I mean, just amazing things that's happening. But what happens is while God's giving Moses instructions on how this tabernacle, how this place of worship that they have to design so that God can be amongst his people, he's on the mountain for like 6 weeks receiving these instructions. So you can imagine this newly found freedom that the Israelites are enjoying, and now they've lost their leader, per se. I mean, Moses really is their leader, their spiritual advisor. He's the one that God has made the priority to be connected to, and he's gone. And so there, it's like, okay, what do we do? Now, my newfound freedom, right, I'm on break. It's kind of like summer vacation. That's the closest thing that I can relate it to, right? Like when we would get done with school, especially as I was older and could drive, it was like freedom. I can do whatever I want. And so what would I do? I would do things like go play games, sports, all of these things. I'd try to fill my time with the most productive but yet okay things to do, right? Like I didn't want to get in trouble. I didn't want to abuse that. But the Israelites, they just have this knack of getting it wrong over and over and over. Over and over and over. And so what do they do while Moses is gone? They come together and they decide they want to build an idol in the form of a golden calf so that they can worship that as if they were worshiping God. Now, I have this game I want to play. It's called Speculative Reenactment. And I say that because this is purely speculation. It's not in the scripture, but this is how I believe it went down. Right? So Aaron, who is at this point kind of leading, and his posse come together, right? And this is what it might have looked like. Bro, what we should totally do is we should build an idol so we can worship it. Yeah, bro, that sounds sweet. Let's totally do that. Maybe we can make it into like a golden calf or something. Yeah, dude, that sounds awesome. But maybe we should check this new covenant that God has, you know, the one that we're supposed to be living by. Yeah, totally. Let's do it. But wait, what's a covenant? It's kind of like that HOA agreement we have for our new hood in the desert. It's like that. We have to follow instructions. Okay, yeah, let's look. First one, do not have any other gods before me. Okay. Second one, do not build an image in the form of anything in the heavens, the earth, or the waters to resemble me. Okay. Yeah, let's do it. Sounds good. Speculative reenactment. Like I said, I didn't read that anywhere in the Bible, the scriptures, so don't take it. Don't take it for anything else than just what I think it might have been, but I'm pretty sure I got that right. Okay. I'm pretty sure I got that right. And so what they do is they, of course, they build this idol and they worship it. And God's response is amazing. He sees it happening and he's with Moses. And this is the response. And I'm going to actually read this to you because it is hilarious. It is. Okay. And you'll see why in a second. On page 64, it says this. Then the Lord said to Moses, go down because your people, whom you brought up out of Egypt, have become corrupt, right? Like when my wife is really mad at our kids, she's like, your son did this, your daughter did that. And that's how God is talking to Moses. He's like, your people are like, wait a second, God, didn't you just part the sea so that they could go across? Yeah, no, your people, Moses, whom you're responsible for, I don't care that I told you to be here and listening to me. They are making a mess of their lives and our covenant. And so we find that this situation that should have been just really easy. Like all you had to do was play lawn darts for 6 weeks. Seriously. That's all you had to do. There was literally nothing else that you had to do. And yet you're going to mess it up. And we see that. And of course we can laugh about that now, but I think to myself, I'm like, how often do I replace God with something that I worship? Right? Like, I think to myself, I could have made it 6 weeks. And yet then when I evaluate it that way, I'm like, I can't even make it 6 minutes sometimes. You know? Like replacing God at the top of my worship hierarchy is something that I'm sure I do on a daily basis. Sometimes I don't even recognize it, but sometimes I recognize it and it still happens. Now, what does that look like? That's different for everybody. We all desire different things. We all appreciate different things to a different level. But what it tells us is that we were made to worship. We are a creature that worships, right? Like you have this favorite band and you go to the concert and you're paying money to observe them to do something that you like. It's like, yes, I love this. That, in essence, is a form of worship. Now, you can go to a concert without replacing God, right? I'm not saying that the concerts are bad. I love concerts. Went to the Foo Fighters this summer. Went to Mumford & Sons this summer. It was awesome, right? But it's not replacing God. It's when it becomes the God that you're worshiping, when it becomes the most important, that it becomes sin, becomes a problem. But it's bigger than that. Like I said, it's because we're designed to worship. And because God recognized that in his people, instead of just being super angry about it, because he was, and he was ready to wipe them out and start new with Moses, kind of like he did with Noah. But Moses has this amazing ability to plead with God. And it's in the story. You can read it. He pleads with him, says, God, please don't. These are your people. You told us that we were going to be your treasured possession. I know that they messed up. I know, but please. And so God spares a group of them, and they are able to go forward. But they have this tabernacle, this place where they can go worship. And so Moses goes, and he begins to build this, and he creates a place where God can dwell amongst his people. So we have these two building blocks that are the structures. We have the commandments, or the law, which are the rules by which to live. And we have the place to do worship, the tabernacle, Church 1.0. But that's not enough. And of course, we know that those two structures, those two building blocks are not enough to cover all of the things that the Israelites would need. And so we find this third one. Let me read this to you. This is on page 70. Then the cloud covered the tent of meeting, which was the tabernacle, and the glory of the Lord filled the tabernacle. Moses could not enter the tent of meeting because the cloud had settled on it, and the glory of the Lord filled the tabernacle. In all the travels of the Israelites, whenever the cloud lifted from above the tabernacle, they would set out. But if the cloud did not lift, they did not set out until the day it lifted. So the cloud of the Lord was over the tabernacle by day, and it was fire by night, and a cloud of fire by night, in the sight of all the Israelites during all of the travels. And then it concludes this chapter by telling you where they have gone since this point. I'm going to read this, and then we're going to wrap up here in a second. During the year that the Israelites were camped near Mount Sinai, God taught them who he was and what he required of them. I am holy, so you are to be holy. God instructed his people to bring specific offerings to the tabernacle: burnt offerings, grain offerings, fellowship offerings, sin offerings, and guilt offerings. The line of priests was anointed, and the intricate system of animal sacrifices was instituted for the atonement of the people's sins. The Hebrews learned God's law about marriage and divorce, appropriate sexual relations, punishment for murder and robbery, and how to make restitution for wrongs. God desired that his people become compassionate, merciful, and just. The promise to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob was now a reality, and the new nation was to be different, so that the entire world would know and worship the one true God, the very source of life and hope. So the third structure, the third parameter that God gave was the system of sacrifice. And this is really important because it was the way out. It was the way that they were able to make right, to atone for the wrongs that they did. It was the way that they were able to... The word atone is definitely another word that you don't see a lot, but if I were to explain it plainly, it would be like if I did something really, really bad that my wife was just super frustrated about, I would maybe buy her something or take her to dinner and apologize. It would be something that would cost me something in order to make right the situation that I created. That's atonement. And so God established this system of sacrifices that they would use to atone for their sins. And so now you have the Ten Commandments, you have the tabernacle, and you have a system for atonement. You have these three structures that God has established for them to be in this covenant that God desired so much to be with his people, to make them his treasured possession. So what does that mean for us? Well, there's a couple clues that God leaves. And the first one is that God's plan for humanity has always been specific. Like up until this point in the story, it feels like there may have been these just random events, like with Noah and wiping it out and all of this. But God has always and is always aware of the entire plan all of the time. He's very specific and has created for us very specific things, knowing that if it's at all vague or at all loose, that we will do nothing but mess it up. Right? Like, he is very specific for a purpose. Now, to kind of illustrate that, I've actually asked these two young men to help me illustrate how maybe specific things would be more important than vague things. So can you guys bring up your instructions and your drawing? And we're going to see what it looks like. Now, they don't know what each other had, and so I'm going to tell you what I wanted, and then you're going to tell me if you arrived at that, okay? Because remember, you're not professional artists, and you can't read my mind. So you didn't know what I wanted unless I told you. So what I really wanted was an image of a car driving down a street with some kids playing on it, Pastor Kelly sitting in the car with his favorite NASCAR number on the side, 24, for Jeff Gordon, yelling at the kids as he's driving by. Okay, that's what I wanted. That's what I desired most. Okay, so Micah, can you tell us or at least show us? I know it's in pencil what it looks like. Can you just hold it up so they can see? Okay, so not bad. What did your instructions say, though?
Draw a car.
That's it? Just draw a car?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. So you didn't get it right because you didn't have the proper instructions, right? Right? Was that mean of me? Yeah. Oh, okay. What about you, Riley? Oh, look at that. A sweet car from the driver's side perspective with a number 24 on it. Kids playing in the street. And Pastor Kelly in the car yelling at them, get off the road. That sounds just like him, doesn't it? Now, Riley actually had 10 instructions, right? And they were all, they specifically got you to this point, right? So if I were to say to you, my friendship with you and you is dependent upon you getting it right, was that fair? Was it fair for you? Was it actually beneficial for you? Was it good? Was it gracious of me? Yes. Okay. Thank you for that. You guys can go sit down. Go ahead. Go sit down. Now, of course, that illustration goes to show that the structures that God gives, although at times or perceived by people outside of Christianity, would feel like giant fun suckers, right? Like God's at the cosmic vacuum just like sucking all the fun out of our lives. But actually, if you think about it, if you look at it as like, hey, this is the thing that I need to get them to, I'm going to lay out specific instructions to get them there. That's grace, right? That's a gracious act by a just God. And so these parameters that he created are actually a good thing for us. The second clue that he leaves was that God's plan the whole time, or God's expectation the whole time, was that they were never going to get it right. And I can say that because he gave them a system of atonement. He gave them a way out, right? Even though he said, my standard is perfection, I know that they're not going to be able to reach that. So I need to give them a way out. And he gave them a system of sacrifice. And so what we observe, with the story, we've been observing what's happening at the ground level in daily life and here on earth. And we've been observing what's happening at the big picture level, the big picture story. So from the ground level, we've observed that the boundaries are actually for our benefit. Even today, not necessarily all, like these ones, yes, but other ones that God has instituted, things like being part of a church community, being generous, being able to give, like these things that he's established that we kind of sometimes want to rub against, you know, that feel uncomfortable, they're for our benefit. They're not for his benefit. He doesn't need them. They're for our benefit. And sometimes we feel like, but that's just our nature. That's our nature pushing back, much like the Israelites did, doing what we want to do rather than what we need to do. And of course, the big picture story is that God always had and always does have reconciliation in mind. That he never expected for us to get it right, but that he always wants us to be right, and he gave an out. And so what that means for us, if you were to apply those three structures, right, if you were to just kind of take them and apply it to our everyday life, I think it would look like this. God gave the Israelites the Ten Commandments, right? He gave them the laws that say, love God and love people. And then Jesus comes along and he says, I'm going to give you a new commandment.
But it actually wasn't that new. It was an affirmation of the commandments that God had given that said, love God and love people. That's how you should live. That's how you're going to accomplish my covenant with you. The second thing that he gave the Israelites, God did, was the tabernacle, a place to worship, a place that they could exercise. But there was very specific requirements for being in there. And there was times when they couldn't, and there's times when they could, and they needed the priest to facilitate the atonement processes. They had very specific things. But through Jesus, God has actually made each and every one of us the tabernacle. Like, the place where God dwelled amongst his people was in a building, and because of Jesus, we are now the place. We don't require a building. If we got up and walked out the door and walked down the street and did the same thing, we would still be having church. That's good news. That's amazing that he can dwell in and amongst us. He's always had a plan for that. And then the third thing was the system of sacrifice. And I think you guys know where I'm going with that. Bloodshed from the most perfect offering that they could bring was the only way that they could atone for the things that they had done wrong. And of course, today God has given us Jesus, the perfect sacrifice to cover sin past, present, and future. The spotless lamb, as he's referred to in the Bible, that covers all sins, so that we are no longer bound to the ability that we have to atone for ourselves, but that Jesus has done that work for us. And that's the grace. That's the freedom that we get to live in. And it's amazing. It's truly, truly amazing. And so today what we're going to do is we're going to take communion. And how fitting is it that we do communion when we just talked about the idea that Jesus was our sacrifice? That Jesus was the reason why we are able to live in such freedom, that we don't live day to day trying to get the commandments right and then atoning for them and then trying again and then atoning for them and getting it wrong and atoning for them. Yes, that is our reality, but we're not bound to it. And that's amazing. That's freedom. So I'm going to have you stand up with me. What we're going to do is we're going to sing one more song. We're going to take communion. If you're a Christ follower and that's something that you want to participate in, we have the elements in the back of the room on the table. You can grab a cracker and a cup of juice, partake with your family or by yourself, whatever is best for you. And while we sing the song, you can do that. And then we're going to return and we're going to close out the service. But let me just say this about communion as it ties to what we've talked about today. We do this to remember this very thing that God gave us, the grace of Jesus, the atonement for our sins. We do this to remember that. And so we participate. We don't simply go through an exercise. We are actively participating in Jesus's grace, his love, his coverage on our lives when we take communion. And when we remember that, it's special. It should be celebratory. And I shared this last week, if you were here. I grew up not understanding that for no other reason besides the fact that I probably wasn't paying attention every Sunday, because that's what we did. We went to church. I wasn't paying attention. I wasn't listening. But this is a celebration. This is a celebration of the fact that we are no longer bound by that. Should be awesome. It should be special. Let me pray for it. God, thank you for your amazing story. And as we understand that we are far more like the Israelites than we want to give ourselves credit for, that we have this uncanny ability to mess it up all the time, and yet you have the whole time had in mind reconciliation through Jesus, through grace, by his blood, so that we can live freely, so that we can celebrate as a church today in 2016 the good news of Jesus. Amazing. Pray that you would allow us to remember properly why we do this. Allow us to worship you and celebrate you with our act of remembrance. We thank you. We praise you. In Jesus' name, amen.